Hello and welcome to Dialect. Dialect is Bristol's first podcast, set up with a grant from the Scarman Trust way back in 2002, and goes out every Thursday morning at 11 a.m. here on BCFM 93.2. This week to Knowle, to look at the Knowle Neighbours with David Solomons. Also our weekly look at Private Eye with Jason Yannakopoulos and our tech review with Elliot and Ed. Dialect's produced by volunteers. If you want to join in, contact Volunteering Bristol, whose office is just off Queen's Square. You can call them on 0117 989 7733 or find them on the web at bristolvolunteers.org.uk. And I'll repeat those contact details at the end of the show. But we start this week with David Solomons. Hi, David, and welcome to Dialect.
Hello, Tony. Thanks for letting me have a bit of time on your programme.
Now, you're from Knowle, and you've got some rather annoying neighbours. Can you just tell us a little bit about why you're here, and what is it with the neighbours?
It all really began in November 2011.
Crikey, that's a while ago.
It's been hell. It's been a hell of not of my own making. And it's been very, very harrowing, and I can honestly say it's the worst experience, and I'm still experiencing it now, the worst experience of my life. It's a nightmare become real.
So this is people living immediately on top, below, next door?
Well, it all began with having my pigeons killed by men hiding in the field behind my house with air rifles with telescopic sights on.
But isn't this, I mean, maybe just kids playing around?
No, unfortunately it wasn't just that. I did report it to the local police force several times, and they said it was probably children throwing stones. But I said no, I'm distinctly familiar with the sound of an air rifle pellet. And there were several other things that were pointing towards what was going on.
Okay, why do you keep pigeons? What's that about?
I didn't actually keep pigeons. I have a bird feeder, and I feed the sparrows and one thing and another. I do feed, you know, bird feeders at the bottom of the garden.
And so the birds were coming to eat, and then they were being shot by people.
They were being literally shot off of my roof, and the back of my house was being peppered with air rifle pellets. I did report this to the police at the time, and they denied it, basically, and they said, oh, it's children throwing stones. And it went on so long that I was even going out into my garden to do some gardening, and air rifle pellets were flying over my head as I was actually doing the gardening. And I went to a certain neighbour, who I was quite friendly with at the time, but now I wouldn't speak to them at all if I could help it. But I said, did you hear that? Can you hear that? It sounded like air rifle pellets hitting the houses. And this particular lady in question, she was sort of denying it as well and saying, oh, no, 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 no. And to cut a long story short, what was happening was two of the local, well-known to the local police force in the area, two young men who have caused supreme amount of antisocial behaviour and violent aggressive behaviour within the Knowle area over years. This has been going on with these two particular people for a very long time. It turns out that they were using the house next door to mine as a hunting lodge, taking out the 9-year-old lad and taking him hunting. And their idea of hunting was standing approximately 15 feet from the back of my garden and setting about culling all of the birds and pigeons that visited my garden and were sitting on my roof and adjacent roofs.
So was it just pigeons or other birds as well? All sorts of... I mean, there are some of those birds that are protected by law.
This is quite right. I do have a bird of prey, a sparrowhawk, and his mate visit the garden quite regularly, who comes after the pigeons. And the sparrowhawk, I noticed the sparrowhawk wasn't coming for a long period of time, and I wondered what was going on with that. And I also noticed we used to have a really good, strong contingent of magpies. And now I know people don't like magpies in particular for one reason or another, but to me they're all part of life, and they're all very important. So I did notice that we went from having a lot of magpies and a lot of pigeons and a lot of other birds as well that were literally just disappeared. They just disappeared.
Now, were they dead, lying at the bottom of your bird feeder or what?
Yes, they were. There was a particular incident and I came out into the garden. There was a lot of blood and I saw a lot of pigeons hiding under the bushes at the bottom of my garden, which was really strange. I thought, this is something wrong here.
Right, well, I think we get the picture. You know, you've got something rather obvious going on, potentially illegal, certainly something you'd think the first people to call are the police. So what happened?
After calling the police and them poo-poo-na-na-ing it, saying it was children throwing stones, I was fortunate to be aware of one of the men in particular in the field with a 10-year-old boy, the son of one of the people who lives next door to me, loading his high-powered air rifle with telescopic sights. So I grabbed my camera and I took several photographs of him with the gun in his hand on a time lapse, and as he was shooting the pigeons off of the roof, he was going around and popping one into the back of my aviary and my garden as well. And so it wasn't just shooting the birds off of the roof as
no,
well.
No, but let's just get to cut to the chase here a bit. What about your reaction from the police being initially negative?
I got an apology from the sergeant of Knowles Police Station. He came to my house on a Sunday, quite unexpectedly, with a PCSO. They came and knocked on the door, and they came in, and I sat down, and the sergeant in particular said, I have to offer you an apology because it's obvious now in my mind that these men were shooting towards the buildings and your property, and I'm sorry that my officers failed to protect you. And I asked him, I said, well, is there anything that can this man be pulled in for it again? Because I called the police when I had the photos and the guy was there. A police officer came down, a male and female police officer came down, and they walked right past this man with an air rifle in broad daylight, in public, not in its case, stood out by the car park and showing off his gun, his weapon, to several of the young children in the area. And I literally had to say to the young officer, that's the man over there. Look, he has the air rifle out of its case in broad daylight in a public place. And the police officer told me to go back indoors. And he casually, and I said, I had to tell the police officer to run after this man to get him, to catch him with the gun, which was, I must admit, I was severely disappointed by that. That his behaviour was, didn't seem to really be bothered about the fact that this man was walking around with a gun in broad daylight in a public place.
Now, this reminds me a little bit of the case that we had last year of Mr. Ibrahimi, who was he was being accused by local people, I think it was in Norwest, I believe.
A Capgrave Crescent.
Of being a paedophile, and he called the police. Police actually came to arrest him, and then he was murdered, wasn't he? And that's
he was murdered, and they set fire. They set fire to his body.
So, yes. I mean, what we're seeing here potentially, I mean, I don't know if this is just me, but is it actually a police are being informed of these things? I mean, you know, potentially an air rifle, certainly a high powered air rifle with telescopic sights, is an extremely dangerous weapon, Dave.
Especially when it's being fired towards the buildings. There are children playing in it. We have a lot of young children, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, in the area. One of these pellets could have ricocheted from the buildings, gone into their eye, blinded the child, or even worse. This was the thing that was always at the back of my mind, that somewhere, you know, I know my birds had been killed and I had to have them put down where they had pellets all in them and everything. Distressing.
This is what bothers me is Lee James, 24 years old, and Stephen Norley, 24 years old, they're both serving time for that murder. of Mr. Ibrahimi,
which could have been avoided.
Yeah, I mean, are you satisfied that the police have now actually gotten up to speed and are doing their job with the people with these air rifles?
Yes, the thing is there is a element of fear within the neighbourhood that I live in because of gang and drug related crime. There is a certain gang who use marijuana, cannabis, and grow it and sell it, and pretty much have the whole of the neighbourhood in a grip.
Well, surely the police are aware of this. The police must be doing something about that, surely.
They have been trying to. They have been trying to, but the thing with this has been going on for so long with me that no one would come forward because of recriminations and the fear of recrimination. These are the kind of people who will burn your house down. They'll wait for you to go out, break in, and smash your place up.
I mean, surely they can only do that if there's some kind of impunity where they feel that there's going to be no consequences.
The difficult thing is being believed to begin with. I think at the beginning, the police thought that I had somehow intimidated these men. And I'd had friends visit me and they said, well, where's your bird? Why isn't your bird out? And I said, yeah, I know, I can't understand why he was there. But they were waiting for my friend to come round, and they were obviously telephoning each other that, oh, David's got his friend around, let's go up the back of his house and start shooting at the house and shoot the birds. And, well, that is ultimately what was going on.
So it's almost as if they were waiting for you and your friend to be there as witnesses to what they were doing before they would carry it out.
I am actually at the moment being targeted and victimised, and it is an ongoing investigation. I've had to have police protection travelling to work, and I've been on the extreme... It's like a panic number. There's so many people that come forward to help the police to try to tackle these thugs, and once you start to do that, the police will put you on a panic list, and if you ring 101, for example, if you hear noises in your garden at night or strange people wandering around looking at your property, which are all the things I've suffered over the last 3 years. You call 101 and then the police will be there pretty much straight away. The police are taking me incredibly seriously now.
Good. Well, look, what other agencies have been involved here? Is it just the police?
No, I'm working with the council as well. The council are so worried and the police are so worried about my safety that they're trying to get me moved out, and I'm on the home choice list. I've been on the home choice list now.
But hang on a minute, look. I don't mean to be funny, but shouldn't it be these other people that have to move, not you?
This is the point. This is the point. This is one of the reasons why I'm in here. And I spoke to the lady from the council who rang me this morning as well about this too, that they should be the ones who are being arrested.
So anyway, you've been through hell, it sounds like. I mean, it's what you said yourself when you first came on.
It's still going
here.
On. It's horrific.
What advice, or you know, if you could have started things all over again, is there anything you've learnt over the last few years that you feel could have done something different? Clearly, people using air rifles to shoot at your house is definitely a matter for the police. That's got to be surely a criminal offence. But is there anything you've learnt that you'd like to share with listeners, just to say, well, you know, if you have antisocial behaviour, this is what you should do?
Well, I felt abandoned, honestly, to begin with. I felt totally abandoned by the police and by the local council. I felt as if I was made to feel as though somehow I had brought this upon myself through possibly knowing these people or having dealings with them. And I will be honest, I don't have any idea who these people are. I did work at the Knowles Media Centre for a short period of time as well. And before this gun business and the drug dealing business, came about, and there was times then where the computer bus, where there was a converted coach, used to come up, and anyone who didn't have a computer at home could go onto the coach and use the computer equipment. But one of the men who were using the air rifles came onto the bus one evening, and with a whole gang of young people, and smashed the computer bus up, and we had to quickly get the girls.
Okay, you know what? That is, for a start, it's quite a serious criminal offence. Absolutely, most definitely arrestable.
It's unbelievable.
Arrestable offence. And also, of course, the drug dealing is a criminal offence. Very much arrestable, imprisonable offence. What are the police up to?
I don't know. I felt abandoned by it all, to be honest with you.
I mean, we had in the example of the Stephen Lawrence case. I mean, I'm not saying this is happening with Avon and Somerset police and up in Knowle. It became pretty obvious that some of the police that were supposed to be investigating the Stephen Lawrence case were actually in the pay of the father of one of the people who had committed the murder. And sometimes the police are in the situation where they're compromised or bribed or whatever, and they're taking two salaries. They're taking a state salary as a policeman. They're also taking a salary for the drug dealers. So there's always that as a possibility. But what's your thoughts about why the police in Knowle just haven't arrested and actually successfully jailed these people for what are obviously criminal offences?
They did actually execute a search warrant last October on the drug dealing side of things, but unfortunately the house was clean. They did find drug-taking paraphernalia, crack pipes and cannabis pipes, but they weren't able to actually catch the person with any drugs that they could convict him with. It's now grown into the situation where the police are calling the house next door to me what they call a nuisance crack house, where there is continual loud music, streams of people turning up day and night, very unusual, unsavoury looking people walking around in hoods and very, very thin and skinny looking, unshaven people.
Well, I mean, other people in the area, David, must be aware of that this is there. It's almost like, you know, this is right in your face, isn't it, for other people who are living in the street?
There are a few, but like I say, the fear of these people is tantamount. You know, people are scared to come forward because they do feel that the police will not be able to protect them.
What keeps you going?
What keeps me going is seeing these people driven out of our area and moved away. And the difficult thing is my property is council property, but the house to the side of me, which the problems are coming from, has gone private.
Probably all the drug money has now bought it.
There has been talk of that the property is probably owned by drug people now, yes.
Amazing. Anyway, any final comments about bits of advice for listeners, David?
Well, if you do find yourself in this situation, and or if you do notice strange, unsavoury-looking people in your neighbourhood that you're wondering who they might be, there are several things you can do. You can call 101. You can call that from a phone box, and it will be very, very cheap. It will only cost as much as 15 pence for 20 minutes. If you don't feel confident and you don't want to give your identity away through your mobile, you can always go to a call box and call from a call box and do it anonymously there, and the police will take that very, very seriously indeed. And if you do feel as though that you don't want to go to the police because and you're scared of recriminations towards yourself or your loved ones or your property, you can always use Crime Stoppers. You can call 0800 555 111. And that is a totally anonymous situation. There are no screens. Your phone does not come up on a screen. You can give as much or as little details as you feel happy to do so.
Yeah. And I suppose certainly one of the lessons from you is don't give up. At the first stage, don't give up. Keep going.
No, so many people are behind me and so many people are aware of this situation it's got seriously, seriously worse over the last 4 to 5 years in the area that I'm living in. It's obviously related to the one bedroom tax. There are an enormous amount of people now who grow cannabis to be able to make their rent, and with their benefits taken away, they're growing cannabis at home to bolster their income.
But they're not growing crack, are they? They're not growing cocaine.
No, this is one of the things that comes from selling the cannabis. They'll sell the cannabis and use the cannabis money to use harder drugs.
Okay, well, anyway, fascinating. David Solomons, all the best luck to you, and thanks very much for joining us on Dialect.
Thanks very much for listening, Tony. Thank you.
You're listening to dialectradio.co.uk. UK.
Well, now it's time to hear from Jason Yannakopoulos again, clutching his copy of Private Eye. Jason, hi.
Hello.
Right, this week, Disabled Students Allowance, DSA, I suppose that is. What is it, and what's going on with it this week?
Well, Disabled Students Allowance is the provisions given to disabled university students, and what's happening to it is that Universities Minister David Willetts has decided to cut it.
He's a funny man, isn't he, David Willetts? Yes. I always wondered if you were to meet him in a dark alleyway, I would actually probably want to just turn and walk the other way very fast. And it's a bit worrying, isn't it, with our politicians. Some of them do come across as a little bit creepy. But so he's saying what exactly about this? He actually wants to get rid of it, does he?
Not altogether. He says he plans to make some significant cuts. But some of the things that means is that a lot of the products readily offered to disabled students now won't be paid for.
So what sort of things did it pay for? I mean, when you were a student, for example.
Well, I mean, when I was there, coming in the first time, I got a new update laptop with some assistive software on it.
Now, what sort of software is that? What do you mean?
Well, I got things such as applications such as Mind Manager to help me with my organisational difficulties, which were fully recommended by my disability assessment.
All right, so you've got software on that laptop which is specifically designed to help your disability.
Yeah.
Oh, right, brilliant.
And David says that will no longer be covered. Also, there's a lot of other things. So some forms of disability insurance for software and special things won't be covered by DSA. And also, not a lot of care won't be covered by DSA either.
So care, what sort of care are we talking about?
Well, obviously we're not talking about medical care because that wasn't really covered by DSA anyway. That was covered by DLA. But sort of provisions such as note-takers, stuff like that.
Oh, note-takers. So it's someone to actually help you physically to do your course. I mean, the thing about this as well is it helps employ people. You know, I can't understand. They want to throw more people on the dole. Mm-hmm. Unbelievable. Okay, next one, because I thrust a copy of something called Free Press into your hands, didn't I? And that's the latest edition of that, which is the Journal of the Campaign for Press and Broadcasting Freedom. Great little organisation, hardly anyone knows about. It's only about, I think, £7 a year, something like that, to subscribe to it if you haven't got a lot of money. And they run various conferences, advertise things to do with press freedom. But you've picked up on press regulation and propaganda. Now, this is propaganda is a word, you know, that we remember from things like the Soviet era, when the Soviet Union wanted everyone in the Soviet Union to believe certain things. And also back to the days of Goebbels and Hitler, and the Hitler regime was very much incredibly biased news. But so is there an implication that propaganda is still rife in the world today?
Well, yes, it's the propaganda this time is being done by things such as the Sun and the Mail and the Telegraph.
Oh dear.
Who, while claiming to protect press freedom, may in fact be attempting to undermine it somewhat.
Well, I mean, who are the Telegraph are?
Well, yeah. I mean, the thing is, they're talking about one of the big things that's come up here is their attacks on the Royal Charter and also on The Guardian, which The Guardian's decision to publish the revelations of Edward Snowden.
Right, so they don't like that, but this all sounds a little bit confusing. The government have got a royal charter, which the idea being is that they have said to the press, well, you're not responsible enough to regulate yourself. You know what this reminds me of? This is Maria Miller and the Parliament. They're saying the same exact thing to Parliament, aren't they? You are not responsible enough to regulate yourself, MPs, so we're going to have to do it for you. But I don't like the idea of the government regulating the press. So what's transpiring? Is it going to, are the press just going to be left to print what they want again and print a retraction in the back page?
Well, it says here that the main underpinning of the charter was that they still have some form of press regulation, but of course it'd have to be done more responsibly with a more obvious retraction if they print one.
Okay, well, that's a really good idea, actually. I mean, that sounds good.
Of course,
I don't bet the Telegraph don't like that.
Well, the Sun, the Mail and the Telegraph have come out with all sorts of things, such as comparing the UK to Zimbabwe.
Oh, dear. Well, it's nothing like that. Sorry, guys, but you got that wrong. Okay, UKIP as well. Something about the press and UKIP, because they've been getting a lot of press, haven't they, in the run-up to the...
They've certainly got a lot of press.
The European elections, which are next
month. In, two articles in the Private Eye of papers that are absolutely backing UKIP. The Telegraph said that Nigel Farage during his debate was persuasive.
This is his debates he's done with Nick Clegg, isn't it? Lib Dems. Yeah, okay.
The persuasive oratory, and he would do exceptionally well in this year's European election.
What did you think of his... did you see either of the debates, Jason?
Yes.
And what did you think of Farage's performance against Nick Clegg?
Wonderfully staged.
Staged? So you think he was sort of doing one-liners and, you know, almost like a comic turn?
It was a bit. If you guys try to drift, I think a lot of his argument was based on how untrustworthy Clegg was.
Well, I think the thing is, there's a lot of people that would agree with him. That's the trouble. Yeah. Especially as Deputy Prime Minister, he sort of hung around in the background. I'm not saying Cameron isn't, because he too was a public relations man before he got into politics. Both of them were.
It's pointed out that one of the Barclay brothers is a discreet but dedicated UKIP supporter.
Ah, right. Now, that Barclay brothers, the Barclay twins, are the people that own the Daily Telegraph, aren't they? They live in this little island in the...
Farage is holding his 50th birthday party at the Barclay-owned Ritz.
Oh, at the Ritz. Okay. So this is in London. Okay. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what you would do, isn't it? If you were a politician, Jason, wouldn't you try and find yourself a press baron who would back you?
I'm not as soulless as that.
No, you wouldn't. I think the thing is, if you're going to win in politics nowadays, surely, I mean, you look to the US, for example, it's all money and press that, you know, a few scandals in the week running up to the election coming out can completely sink a political party. This is the trouble. And no wonder these press barons don't want to be too much regulated. So overall, what's the story about the UKIP press? Basically, that they are actually getting into bed with various press barons and getting them to sign up to the UKIP
literally
agenda.
On the other side of the same page, it points out similar things with Rupert Murdoch.
Oh, no. Okay, let's go on to Rupert and his wonderful News Corp, or News International, The Sun, his little empire, what used to be the News of the World, The Times, The Wall Street Journal now, I think it is as well. He controls the Jerusalem Post. I mean, all over the world, this man is a massive, mega press baron.
Yeah. Geez, I mean, he is, from a lot of perspectives, quite possibly the most powerful man on earth, and quite possibly the most soulless.
Oh, gosh. Well, he was also... Wasn't there a James Bond film made about him?
Oh, well, there's probably quite a few. Was he Blofeld?
Something like that, yeah. Anyway, so what's he saying then? What's his latest?
Well, it's about disappearance of flight MH370.
Right, this is the Malaysian 777, 777 that disappeared a month ago,
Jeremy Hudson said in a Sun column, it's a perfect demonstration of why, when it comes to news and social media, it's about as useful as sending smoke signals on a windy day. Now, that might be all very well for Clarkson, but as has been pointed out to Private Eye, Rupert Murdoch, on his own personal Twitter feed, was going absolutely mad about this, claiming without a shred of evidence... 777 crash confirms jihadists trying to make trouble for China. Chance the US to make common cause, befriend China while Russia bullies. And then 6 days later, he also came up with World Team Trans 6 by 777 disappearance. Maybe no crash, but stolen, effectively hidden. Perhaps in North Pakistan, like Osama bin Laden.
Right, all the time he's doing this anti-Islamic agenda, this Islamophobic agenda, isn't he? Both of those two tweets are saying, well, obviously it's Osama bin Laden that kidnapped the plane, you know, basically.
Yeah.
Now, if you go back to 9/11, you find there was an attempt to pin that on these Islamists. Lots and lots of evidence that Osama bin Laden had absolutely nothing whatsoever to do with that. Although he did provide a nice excuse for all the Americans to then go in and attack Afghanistan for its own geostrategic reasons. Osama bin Laden had nothing to do with 9/11, nothing whatsoever. I mean, can you hijack four aircraft and fly them through the most heavily defended airspace for several hours from a cave in Tora Bora?
Well, one of the most interesting points of that was the one that hit the Pentagon, where it sort of did almost a loop and then went past through many streetlights without touching a single one, and made a perfect flight into the side of the Pentagon.
And then disappeared. So there wasn't a wreckage of a plane.
And the supposed hijacker on that one The person that trained him to fly said that he was an awful pilot, and there's no way he could have done that.
Yes, well, it was one of the most incredible aerobatic manoeuvres ever done in an airliner. Anyway, one of the best places to look at this sort of stuff is called P-Prune. It's the Professional Pilots Rumour Network. It's a forum online, and you'll find the professional pilots rather taking the mickey out of that story that it was one of the hijackers that flew a plane into the Pentagon, Jason. Right, next story, the Ministry of Defence, the MOD. I've had dealings with them over the years. Don't trust them as far as I can throw anything, I'm afraid.
Well, here we are. At the end of last month, Vincent, the Ministry of Defence bombarded the media with upbeat news about the Royal Navy's new aircraft carrier, HMS Queen Elizabeth, which will deliver radical change in the Navy's capabilities.
In other words, it might have an aircraft on it.
Yeah. To help the PR blitz, BAE Systems released a clutch of official computer-generated images of what the ship looked like sailing to Portsmouth Harbour.
So they're going to send those computer-generated images into battle in case there is a war.
I think this is kind of what the private eye is getting at on this one. By sheer coincidence, the very same day, in a report entitled "Deterrence in the 21st Centuries," MPs on the Commons Defence Select Committee expressed a deep concern that cuts to the Royal Navy are particularly damaging. And for the first time since World War One, Britain did not have an operational aircraft carrier.
Oh dear! And of course, we sold all of our what were those jump jets, Harrier jump jets, to the Americans for a knockdown price, like 10% of their value. And we just spent, oh gosh, twice as much as what we sold them for, refurbishing them for the Americans. So anyway, okay, next story. It's those famous four words again. Letters, rather, ATOS, spells ATOS, one of your favourite companies. Not, I believe.
Absolutely not.
These are the people who've been doing these work capability assessments.
They have the personal and defence payments. I love the fact Private Eye even refers to them as disabled people's least favourite outsourcing giant. It's been accused of... this is brilliant. It's been accused by MPs of lying to government to win a £184 million disability assessment contract.
Not another one. £184 million of public money, but how did they lie? What's Private Eye saying?
Well, it says that to win the deal to assess claimants and new personal independent payments across London, ATOS claimed in its tender document that 16 NHS trusts were among those who had contractually agreed to carry out assessments in 740 sites. In fact, only 4 NHS trusts finally signed up, and there are only 96 sites, which meant that disabled people face long, difficult journeys.
Right, so they have lied. If you want some advice, government, don't trust these people. ATOS, strike them off the list. Get a small company, give them the contract instead. Small, reliable, trustworthy, and preferably British. Maria Miller, the Culture Secretary, we can't let her get off scot-free because she's a bit of a naughty girl.
Not.
She got caught fiddling her expenses.
Oh, dear. Wow. Well, that's an absolute shock to see that the Prime Minister still says that she essentially did the right thing.
No chance.
Well, I mean, she says it's ruined her, and the Prime Minister is still backing her. So
the Prime Minister's backing her.
Yep.
Is he used to backing horses that lose? What's going on here? You know, as well, he is supposed to police the standards of MPs. And he himself regularly breaks the MP standards code. So he's not the best person to be doing that, is he? I mean, last year, he went to the Bilderberg conference, which is the meeting of the NATO elite. And he actually went along himself, even though, as a government minister, he is not supposed to go along to these private meetings without making a full declaration of what was discussed afterwards. He didn't make that declaration. He broke the code. He polices the code. He ignored his own policing breaking of the code. So I think we need someone else as prime minister, don't you, in order to do that job properly?
Oh, absolutely.
And what about Maria Miller? Should she stay or should she go?
She should definitely go.
Okay. Anyone, any ideas of who to replace her apart from your good self, Jason?
I'm afraid she does have to be replaced by an MP.
About Theresa May? Do you think she'd do a good job?
Oh, God, no.
All right, Jason, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Tony. Bristol Community FM, 93.2.
Your voice, your choice. Hello, it's Elia Pablo with our weekly technology roundup. We are here with Ed Landa. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you, Elena. How are you?
Good. We are talking today about our smartphone, something that we all carry. We have all sorts of information there. We have our contact details, even some bank accounts, some telephone numbers, everything in there. And people is having thoughts about what's going on there, what's inside our mobile phones. What do you think about this?
I think most people are very, very dependent on their smartphones. I'll go further and say some people are deeply in love with their smartphones because it's something that's very portable, something that's normally very close to hand, and it can do everything for you. You know, it's got your favorite music on there, it's got your friends on there, it's got your social media on there. It just makes life very simple and also pretty complicated because it makes our lives very busy.
Yes, and it makes it difficult the talking with the people that is around you. You go to in the train, everyone is on their mobile phones. But what is inside our mobile phones? Is there something that could be used against us?
Yeah, there's a lot of technology in all smartphones. You've obviously got the hardware that's in there, which is composed of various microchips and discrete components, and then you have the all the layers of software on top of it. And there are people who dismantle smartphones, and they will give a detailed breakdown of all the hardware. But when it comes to the software, it's something less clear. And there are people who also try and break down all of the various processes in these phones and try and find out if they are revealing things about ourselves that we're not aware of.
I would say, what would happen if the police or some spy agencies get in our mobile phones? Do they need some kind of warrants, like if they get into your house?
My understanding is that the police would need to have a warrant to seize and search your phone. It's not clear to me what happens at airports, if they are within their rights to take your phone away from you and scan through it, or if that has to be through some legal process. As we've covered on the show before, the spy agencies have different ways of learning about your phone and yourself through intercepting information that's been sent from your phone, and also embedding applications into your phone that reveal things about your browsing habits and your contacts and exactly what you're sending to people.
Sort of applications like Facebook, Twitter, or even like other applications that they wouldn't seem harmful.
From reading up about the rogue apps, it seems like the major apps, Facebook, Twitter, etc., the security agencies are claiming that they're not embedding anything in them natively. They're claiming they're exploiting vulnerabilities and weaknesses that already exist, just like any other hacking team who want to try and find information out about you. But that's not to say that there aren't other apps that have been specifically concocted and created to bury down into your phone and learn everything they can about you and transmit them very neatly and cleanly and concisely to the owner of those apps.
I read applications such as Angry Birds or even Candy Crush, which it seems they are just games. They gave lots of information about us from the, like, to the NSA or GCHQ. How is that possible? Information such as marital status or our political ideas, things like that.
So my understanding of this is that these apps identify you to a server through a bunch of information. And if it's linked to Facebook, then that would include your username. Perhaps the app wants to know your marital status, maybe not, but all this information is sent from your phone, unencrypted, out into the internet. So that's where it becomes vulnerable to interception. And that's my understanding of what these security teams are doing. I imagine both inside and outside of government, they're just sifting through lots of unencrypted data that's buzzing around the Facebook servers or the whichever advertising servers are hooked into the free versions of Angry Birds. Again, you know, every time you start up one of these free apps, it's downloading live advertising for you, targeted specifically at you, and it's sending back to the servers identification about you.
So it wouldn't be very secure, but as long as you don't have it linked with Facebook, it's just some publicity and things like that.
Yeah, I'm generally not inclined to ever sign into anything on the internet via Facebook, just because it's, you know, you're opening a very wide door into your person to any number of these companies, and they seem to think it's a nice and easy and simple thing to do, sign in via Facebook. But for me, it's a very strong emotional feeling that there's absolutely no way I'm letting this company get its tentacles into what I consider to be my personal information.
So that's a good advice then. Don't link these kind of applications to Facebook. What about the Career IQ? Have you heard about this?
So this is new to me.
Basically, Career IQ is a company that created a program called IQ Agent. Is a clandestine program that is already in our mobile phones, like especially Android, and you don't know it's there. You can go to the running programs, you won't see it there, but you go to all the programs, and lots of mobile phones have it there working in the background, and what it does is gathering information about everything, your location, even texts that you receive, the content of the text, everything.
It's pretty scary stuff. It's new to me, actually, but I've been able to do some reading up on it, and it's a third-party software company, arguably a consultancy, and they are providing diagnostic features for Android, I think perhaps iOS as well. So these programs are supposed to run on your phone and record absolutely everything, you know, helping them to debug these phones, make the software more efficient, and so on and so forth. And I mean, I can understand how that has a lot of value when you're developing a phone platform, and even in a early rollout phase when you're dealing with not necessarily early adopters, but people actively involved in a trial of these devices. But once they're in the hands of the general public, having all these features logging everything you do, that does worry me, I have to be honest.
It seems illegal, actually. This controversy appears when it was a guy called Trevor Ecker. He's a security researcher. He made like a research about this, and then the company created a video saying that all this wasn't quite true, that they just wanted to improve the devices and like such as battery life, but they didn't record keystrokes or providing tracking tools, any of this. And then this guy creates a second video. It's called Career IQ Part 2. It's very interesting. It's in YouTube. And you can actually see that everything is on there. It's not easy to uninstall. It's not easy to find. And then this guy connected this program with his computer, and he sent himself a text, and the full content of the text was there. And when he, like, all the keystrokes were there, everything, absolutely everything. It's very, very scary.
Yeah, it is. And firstly, it does seem suspicious and strange that a company with the skills of someone like Google or Apple need to go to a third-party company for this software that's running on their... So it's running on their devices. I find that strange. And for the representatives of these companies to come out publicly and lie about what it's doing, it doesn't, again, you know, that doesn't inspire confidence or trust whatsoever. And to hear that these programs are running in the shadows and in the darkness on pretty much everyone's smartphones is quite worrying to me.
Yes, it's quite scary, and it brings the question, where is this information going? Because what do they care of the text I just received, of who I am calling, or even where I am? Another thing is the spying on the NSA and the GCHQ and other kind of spying agencies on absolutely everyone. I read a report, apparently Germany is one of the countries with more surveillance through the phone and internet from the NSA. It's very, like, Why Germany? I know it's a big country.
Yeah, it's a difficult one to answer. I'm sure I could say all kinds of controversial things, but you know, Germany is a powerhouse of Europe. My understanding is they have a fairly healthy democracy, particularly in terms of activism. There seems to be quite an open and public activist movement in Germany. He seemed to have actually quite impressive sway over the government. So you could put aside all of history, you could put aside all of these notions of the Fourth Reich and everything, and you could look simply at the fact that Germany has power. And if there is some democracy in Germany, then the people of Germany have power. And maybe that's not something that other countries and corporations and NGOs are happy with.
So you would say they are spying on, obviously, politicians and activists and people with a high profile, but not like people like you or me?
Well, who knows, really? When does someone like you or me suddenly become someone they're interested in? And these spying agencies, I've seen interviews with these guys, and their feeling is that they don't want to be caught with their pants down. So they will say, we need all the information we can always get, because, you know, a threat can come out of nowhere, and you can't just selectively surveil, because that's, you know, threats evolve in the shadows. But that's also very paranoid. It's not a nice feeling, and I'm sure they like that. It's not a nice feeling that if you were to move off the beaten path, that suddenly you develop a file and you become somebody that they take a keen interest in.
It seems like everyone is spying on everyone. And apparently Edward Snowden have said that Angela Merkel has been spied by GCHQ and NSA for the last 10 years through her mobile phone. And she's saying now that she wants a new European communication network to fight for this, to not allow she's being a spy on.
I think it's all very funny, because there's all this talk and rhetoric and outrage and so on and so forth. But I'm sure Angela Merkel has frequent contact with the German security services, and I'm sure they're very competent and very active themselves. And she probably knows what they're doing with their allies and non-allies. And so you'd think it would apply both ways. And that it seems to me a bit like a comedy where everyone's spying on everyone and everyone's pretending to be outraged when the public get wind of it.
Yeah, I think in the moment you became someone important, even a candidate for a political party, you have to admit you are going to be spied, and you will spied as well.
Yeah, I have some quite cynical opinions on this. My feeling is that if you are going to be going anywhere, then it's quite handy if they have a file on you, skeletons in your closets, that they can then pull out to pull you down if you step out of line.
Well, thank you very much, Ed. It's been a pleasure.
My pleasure, Leon.
You're listening to dialectradio.co.uk.
Jeff Sparks with the What's On Guide. Hi, Jeff.
Hello, Tony. Thank you. This is your What's On Guide from Dialect. Starting with Friday, 11th of April, Sky Larkin will be performing with support from Empty Pools at the Old Bookshop in 65 North Street, Bristol. Tickets are £7 each and doors open at 7:30 p.m. Also on the 11th of April, Bleach will be performing with support from Hysterical Injury and also Joe Probert at the Top Deck of the Thecla in the Grove, Bristol. Tickets are £6 in advance and doors open at 6:30 p.m. On to Song of the Week, I present Wilco Johnson and Roger Daltrey. They released this album, Going Back Home, this year, and it features 10 songs by Wilco Johnson and also a Bob Dylan cover. This is a song from that album, and it's titled I Keep It To Myself.
Oh,
course, Wilco Johnson and Roger Daltrey with I Keep It To Myself from the album Going Back Home, which was released this year. Into Saturday 12th of April, and the big band soul group On The Edge will be performing at the Tunnels in Bristol and Exeter Mews, Bristol. Tickets are £6 in advance and doors open at 7:30pm. Finally, on 12th of April, the Rosillos will be performing with support from Dragster and also Radio Nasties at the Fleece in St Thomas Street, Bristol. Tickets are £15 in advance and doors open at 7pm. That's all from me. Thanks for listening and have a good week. Take care and goodbye.
That's all for this week. Dialects of Bristol's first weekly podcast for your MP3 player, broadcast on Bristol Community FM 93.2 at 11 every Thursday morning. If you're online, you can subscribe to our email list, which will remind you every Tuesday evening when Dialect goes online. That's at dialectradio.co.uk, and you can download this show from bcfmradio.com/dialect from Thursday lunchtimes. Thanks to our studio guests, Dave Solomons from Knoll, also Jason Yannakopoulos, Elia Pablo and Ed Lander. Dialects are Bristol Broadband Co-op production, and anyone can contribute. If you'd like to, contact us through Volunteering Bristol, 0117 989 7733, on the web at bristolvolunteers.org.uk. That was Dialect, and I'm Tony Gosling, wishing you a very good week. Thanks for listening. Till the same time next week, goodbye for now.
Tears in your eyes just make me wanna cry.